we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, here with Walker Wildman. One of those rare days where we get to be in studio together and co-host the program. Walker, a lot to cover today and some interesting announcements just in the last few minutes. So we got a lot to cover on Iran and Israel. Of course, it's the 250th of Bunker Hill, so we got to talk a little bit of history and cover that as well. But man, thanks for co-hosting today. This will be fun.
Absolutely, Rick. And I'm not sure you and I can do a show without talking about history.
That would be very
unorthodox. So
it would be. And you're actually headed up there. You're going to be taking people to the Boston area.
Exactly.
In, what, 4 months, 5 months, something like that?
Yeah. David Barton, or Tim Barton, a good friend of yours and mine. We're going to be taking a group in October, and we're already full, Rick. So
that's great.
I feel bad talking about it because people get excited and then they can't register.
Well, it just means we might have to do another one next year.
And duly noted.
And I was just there. What was it? Let's see, April 19th. I went out for the 250th of the Shot Heard Around the World, and I had a bunch of the Patriot Academy students with me. So we went on out to Bunker Hill, and you know, literally got to, you know, walk the fields there and see where it all happened. Pretty wild that we're going to basically have some sort of date like that almost every other week, or at least once a month between now and July 4th, 2026. So a lot of opportunities for us to talk about these kind of things. I think the one on Bunker Hill that I like to emphasize is Dr. Warren, because we think of Patrick Henry as the greatest orator of the Revolution, and he was. But had Warren survived Bunker Hill, he probably would have been. He was amazing, man. His speeches at the Old South Meeting House there, where they would do those anniversary of the Boston Massacre for like 4 years, they had these big gatherings, and he did two of the speeches. John Hancock did one. I forget who the other one was, but he was amazing. I mean, he was such a good wordsmith, but also just such a patriot. And I loved his response to his mama. Mama said, "Hey, quit getting so close to the heat of the battle." Because I think after Lexington, he ended up, you know, following the British back and taking out a bunch of guys or whatever. And she's like, "Stop going so close. You're supposed to be at the back. You know, you're too important to the cause." And
yeah,
he said something to the effect of, "Mom, you know, wherever danger is, for the cause of liberty, that's where you'll find me." I love that. I mean, that's that be dangerous mindset. Anyway, yeah, lots of cool stuff to cover.
Yeah, there is. We'll be on going to Bunker Hill on Wednesday of our trip. So our trip's a Sunday through a Thursday. And we'll be doing the Freedom Trail. That's a full day, actually probably a day and a half. And then, yeah, USS Constitution, Bunker Hill, John Adams Holman State Park, Hancock Clark House, Minuteman statue. There's a ton of history there.
I if I were there with you, Walker, I'm not gonna be able to make this one. If I were there with you, I would have some fake muskets and we'd be running around in the fields like we were, you know, 8 years old playing. that stuff gets me so. I love walking in the steps of the founding fathers. I mean, there's nothing like it.
Well, and what all they went through, Rick, doesn't even compare to what we experience today in modern America. You know, there was no vehicles. You mentioned muskets, right? Single shot load, manual load muskets, and manual loaded cannons, horseback, foot. I mean, it was just a whole different ball game. And the fact that this ragtag group of farmers and, you know, woodsmiths and others beat the British is just still amazing to me. And it gets into our providential history as far as God's plan for America. It's rich history. So you getting excited about it is justified.
Well, I'm thinking about even, you know, like you said, the providential history part of it, because even, you know, we did the 250th of Patrick Henry's speech a couple of months ago. March 23rd was the big day. I know that because it was my birthday and he planned it that way. He knew that 200 years later I'd be born.
Yeah, in honor of Rick Green.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah. Anyway, no, he's, you know, because he talks about in there, that, you know, there's a just God who presides over the destinies of nations and who will raise up friends to fight our battles. I mean, they absolutely had that providential worldview. And just to segue to Warren real quick, I got to share just one little paragraph out of his. This was the last one that he gave. So this was 1775, just a few months before the Battle of Bunker Hill. And actually, I guess it would have been, it was actually a couple of weeks before Patrick Henry's speech, because this is like early March, March 6th, I think, is Boston Massacre. Anyway, he says this, and you're going to recognize this, Walker, because Ronald Reagan quotes this in his first inaugural address. And this is way down in his speech. Now, I want people to picture the Old South Meeting House is packed. They literally had to let him in through a window, and the British soldiers are sort of sprinkled throughout the crowd there to intimidate him, basically saying, be careful what you say. And because he wasn't careful with what he said, that's why they literally dug up his body and desecrated his body. They hated this man. They killed him at Bunker Hill, and they hated him so much that they mutilated his body. But here's what he said. This is just one paragraph out of the whole speech. Our country is in danger, but not to be despaired of. Our enemies are numerous and powerful, but we have many friends determining to be free, and heaven and earth will aid in the resolution, or aid the resolution. On you depend the fortunes of America. You are to decide the important question on which rests the happiness and liberty of millions yet unborn. Act worthy of yourselves. The faltering tongue of hoary age calls on you to support your country. The lisping infant raises its suppliant hands, imploring defense against the monster slavery. Your fathers look from their celestial seats with smiling approbation on their sons, who boldly stand forth in the cause of virtue, but sternly frown upon the inhuman miscreant who, to secure the loaves and fishes to himself, would breed a serpent to destroy his children. Oh, that oratory, just amazing. You know, for me, a guy that has trouble saying more than two syllable words, that is just, I mean, to me, what I saw when I'm reading that, I just see the picture of, okay, we can either be, smiled upon because we're carrying the torch of freedom, we're protecting the torch of freedom, or we're going to be the ones that get lazy and we breed a serpent to destroy our children and our future generations because we didn't do our job whenever we were called upon to defend freedom. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff.
And to your point, at the time, that level of understanding, that level of being able to articulate the cause, and that level of being able to just be educated on why liberty was so important and is so important, wasn't commonplace. Meaning, you didn't have a university in every state and every colony, at least to the degree that we do today. You didn't have this basically mass education, right? From K through 12 all the way up to higher ed. And so it was really up to our founding fathers and that generation to be studied up. So it didn't come easy, didn't come free. They had to read, they had to write, they had to understand history, they had to understand the scripture, how human nature works. And all of that drove their determination.
That sounds a lot like tough times making tough men. I like that. I like the way you just described that. And I do think, though, bro, there's a hunger for it now that we haven't seen. People are more willing. They dive into, the American Family materials more. They dive into our Constitution classes at Patriot Academy. They, certainly not the majority of the country, but we're just looking for 3%, right? We just need that small percentage that's willing to do what you just described. I think, searching the scriptures, even just that, just the willingness to get into God's word, read through the Bible once a year, actually dive into some of those topics about how to treat your neighbor and how to form a society. There's more of an appetite for that now, I think, than I've seen in my lifetime. And I think that's a really encouraging thing. And the fact that the 250th is happening, and all throughout this year, the president's going to be talking about it, just like he did last weekend on the Army's 250th. And there's just a great opportunity, man. It's all kind of lining up for us to have a great year.
There is. And people, to your point, are looking, and the data is beginning to suggest this, people are looking for purpose. I mean, they're tired of nothingness, which is what a lot of our culture offers, is nothingness. I mean, between, TikTok and all these other forms of entertainment and stimulation, a lot of folks are just getting to the end of it and saying, there's no purpose here. There's no meaning. I want to be a part of something greater than myself. I want to be a part of restoring America as we once knew it. And I think that's what's driving a lot of people. And I can't say that without mentioning that I believe God's behind it. I believe God is waking people up to the truth that we're not to live for ourselves, for selfish ambition, that we should be focused on something greater than ourselves, whether it's our family legacy, whether it's, you know, carrying on a family business, or do what we do with our local church and how we steward our citizenship in America. Everybody ultimately deep down has this desire for something greater than themselves. And I think a lot of people in this generation are realizing that.
Yeah, and I think it's multi-generational even, because I of course get to see that with the young people. I've already done a couple of the leadership congresses this summer, Colorado and Idaho. I'm headed to Florida tonight, and we'll do one there for the next few days, and then several more throughout the summer. But, you know, as you know, we get to work with these young people, and we see that exactly what you just described, this frustration with the emptiness of the culture and a searching for purpose and wanting to be a part of something bigger than themselves. But then it's also, Lance Wallnau was out at the campus of a month or so ago, and we were filming some of this stuff for this new course, Rebuilding Liberty. I had told Lance, I had heard his talk on convergence. I said, you got to come give me just 10 or 15 minutes on that to add to this course, because there's these 50, 60, 70 year olds, even 80 year olds in their 80s going, I'm not done yet. I still want to be involved. I still want to make a difference. I want to be Caleb. I want to say in my 80s, give me that mountain. I'll take that toughest area. And there's a ton of people out there like that, and they're just kind of looking, going, okay, God, show me what to do. And that's why I encourage people, listen to the core every day, because, you know, Walker and I are constantly going to be talking about action steps, things you can do. It's not just information. We're not just saying, here's what's going on with Iran and Israel, which we'll talk about when we come back from the break. But we're not just saying, here's what's going on in the world or with America and these executive orders. We're almost always going to be talking in the program about, and here's what you can do with it. You know, and I think, Walker, that's part of the challenge, is people just haven't known what to do. They've had this stirring, but they haven't known what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And the wonderful thing about how God has established mankind and established nations and the family institution is that every person is given the opportunity to make an eternal impact. We all have a sphere of influence, whether it be small or large, to impact people for eternity. And that spills over into our community and our state and our nation. And so everybody has the same opportunity. We're not all born into the same circumstances. Everybody comes from different backgrounds. Some people, you know, have more than others from a material standpoint, and some people have different opportunities than others. But we're all given the chance to sow seeds of righteousness, of prosperity from a biblical perspective, through our children, through our grandchildren, and to really create generational blessings. And so that's what's wonderful about this country is biblical Christianity is that every person has the opportunity to make a lasting impact.
Well, and to your point on the biblical foundations of it, I mean, that's the beauty of the parable of the talents, right? That some start with more than others, but we all have that responsibility to do the best we can with what we got, where we are, to multiply what God's given us, to be good stewards, and in this case, you know, freedom and the country and the ability to influence what's going on out there. You know, you may have been given one talent, maybe two, maybe three, maybe five, whatever it is, whatever you started with, do the most with it that you possibly can, and come alongside other people that want to make a difference. And we're going to rebuild Liberty over this next year, folks. So make sure you're listening to the core every day. Make sure you're signing up for some of our classes, that you're getting these materials, that you're being a force multiplier, sharing with your friends and family. Share the program with your friends and family. But there's just going to be a lot of great opportunities to do that. Some big things happening, of course, in the last few days and even in the last few minutes, with regard to Iran and Israel and other, you know, big issues to talk about. And of course, we want to take some of your phone calls. So 888-589-8840 is the phone number, 888-589-8840. In just the last few minutes, the president has announced that, and we're going to try to dive into this a little bit, that we have air superiority over Iran. So we don't know yet what he means by we, but very, very interesting. And of course, a big debate within the conservative movement over whether or not we should be involved. So we'll talk about all of that when we come back. I'm Rick Green here with Walker Wildman. You are listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to the second segment of this special edition of today's program, At the Core, here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here. Rick Green and I are hosting this program together on today's edition, and we try to do this once a month because the listening audience prefers it. And if we do it too much, then you'll get used to it, and then you won't appreciate it. So,
or they'll get tired of us.
Yeah, it's kind of like grandma's dessert. You know, she can't bake it every night, just every once a week or so.
Yeah. Did you just call us grandma's dessert? I don't know
how. Well, you
that.
Know,
I mean, is that like banana pudding? Or you know, or is it? Yeah.
No, they just call you pudding, Rick.
Look, Rick, if it doesn't sound good, just don't even talk about it anymore. Just move on. Yeah. Right? That's what I've learned about bad analogies and bad jokes. Just keep going, right? Yeah, and people will forget about them.
Yeah, there you go.
But you had to like ask about it.
Right, I had to just drag it out. Yep,
yeah, yeah. So yep, then yep. It's like, instead of looking dumb once, I look dumb twice.
No, I was just wondering what that said about our relationship. That's all. I just, you know, yeah. Like trying to figure it out here.
Well, we're tight. Yeah, we're tight. Yeah, yeah. I don't think we're like dessert, though. I don't think that's a good... No, we're better than that.
All right, show's off the rails. Can we go to break here?
Yeah, back to a break after 30 seconds.
Yes.
Rick, let's talk about what's going on in Israel.
Yeah.
This has been obviously roughly a week in the making, maybe a little more than that as far as when Israel began striking Iran. There's a divided party. There's divided parties on this, and within the conservative movement, there actually I haven't heard much from the left on this topic, much debate at least. But amongst the conservative movement, and even amongst some evangelical Christians, there's disagreement on what level of U.S. engagement should be involved here. And I'll just tell you my position, the way I'm viewing it today,
yeah,
subject to change. And then you can let me know what you think. But I have reservations about full-fledged involvement in the war between Israel and Iran. And here's my primary concern. My primary concern, as has been with the Ukraine issue, with Afghanistan, with Iraq, my concern is that what looks like maybe a one-month campaign to disable Iran's nuclear program turns into a 10-year war worth trillions of dollars, and who knows how many American lives. That's my concern after, you know, watching these things play out over the last 20-plus years. That's what I think about every time there's a question about, does the U.S. get involved in a foreign conflict? I immediately go to, all right, is this going to turn into a decade or 20 years and $5 trillion and endless American lives? But I understand as well the threat that Iran poses. Now, how far are they from a nuclear weapon? I don't know. Israel says they were close. They were weeks away. You know, Iran disputes that. So I don't know. Did they have a nuke? Do they not? I don't know. Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I mean, Israel's not perfect, and we shouldn't assume that everything that Israel says is the cold, hard truth. But I believe that Iran was developing a nuclear weapon because they themselves admitted to it. They said they are producing a nuclear weapon, and they have the right to.
Right.
And so I understand the threat to Israel. Obviously, the Iranian mullahs want to take out Israel. They say that on national television every week. So I think Iran's a problem. I think that if we could have a less dangerous Iran on the block over there in the Middle East, I think that would be beneficial for America and our allies. What lengths I'm willing to go to ensure that, I don't really know. What are your thoughts?
Man, I think you summarized it fantastic, and I think so many people feel exactly the same way, and you really just described exactly the thought process that most of us have been going through here. And I think we can even step back and say, why is it that we have hesitation? And even just from a public policy, foreign policy perspective, my friend Matthew Faraci said it best last night on Flashpoint. He said, we got to remember all wars are not the same. And immediately my response was, yeah, I think what's happened is we're so frustrated with the, stupid foreign wars, right? The times when we have gone in, done exactly what you're describing. And I was actually thinking 20 years, right? Where we go in not knowing really what our objective is, or we get, mission creep, and it just ends up being 20 years and trillions of dollars, and we didn't, actually secure anything for the long term. And then, of course, all the fraud and the Ukraine thing that just seems so ridiculous, still seems ridiculous to me. And then pile on top of that, the loss of trust in the institutions. And so not trusting the CIA, not trusting the FBI, not trusting even the president and the administration and the State Department, and just all of the cynicism that we've justifiably grown into over the last few years. And you pile all that in, and I completely understand the somewhat knee-jerk reaction of everyone just to say, I don't want to help anybody. We got to fix our own country. I don't want any money going anywhere. I don't want any of our young men dying for anybody else. Mm-hmm. I totally understand people having that perspective. I start with, first of all, the exception to the rule, as you even just alluded to, with it being Israel and the biblical command of support of Israel and all of those things, and the political ally that they are in terms of being the only real market economy and constitutional republic and all of those things in the Middle East. And so I start with that. And then, of course, there are situations where even someone that doesn't fit all of those definitions, we should still intervene or help if a lot of other boxes are checked. So I throw all of that into the picture just to say our side has to be more intellectually curious and willing to dive deeper and do exactly what you and I are doing right now, talking it through and thinking through these things. So for those people that have just jumped on the bandwagon of we shouldn't do any of this and we just got to, I understand where you're coming from. But let's dive a little deeper, and I think now we can do. Now let's look at this situation with regard to that, because I do think there's also, just throw into this one more time, and I'll stop filibustering here, throw in one more thing. There does seem to be an opportunity to really reshape the Middle East and the whole conflict. Because Iran has been at the center of all of this terrorism, and they got so much money, and Obama and Biden both opened the floodgates for them with the money that allowed them to do a lot of the terrorism. And so, if a regime change could take place, or if the Iranian people could rise up and be like they were in the 70s, there's a possibility. But I'm like you. I want to know going in, like not just be knee-jerk reaction here. I want to know going in.
I know. And Rick, the thing is there's not a lot of these conversations happening that you and I are having. Because there's these opposite ends of the spectrum. And I mean, exhibit A of this is Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, that kind of group, which I actually agree with Tucker on, I don't know, probably 80% of the issues, more than that.
Absolutely.
But then there's the Sean Hannitys. And the reason I'm mentioning these two is because they're having this public back and forth right now. Your Mark Levins, your Lindsey Grahams out of South Carolina. And so the Tucker Carlsons of the world, they're just like, no, we ought not be involved in any of these foreign conflicts. And that's their default position. And they really don't argue beyond that. They just keep going back to the fact that we've got our problems domestically and we ought not be involved in foreign conflicts. All right. Then your Lindsey Grahams, they're like, he gets excited about war. And I'm saying that, I'm not being sarcastic. When you watch Lindsey Graham and others like that talk about Iran, you would think that Iran had like killed their grandmother or something. They're like so emotional and religious and like adamant that we've got to like obliterate Iran.
Right.
Without weighing out and talking through what does that lead to? And this is the question that we won't know until we get to the other side of this, if the U.S. and Israel push it this far. And that is, what is the ultimate objective here? All right, because if you say, well, the ultimate objective is to eliminate Iran's nuclear capabilities. Okay, that makes sense. What do you have to do to get there, and do you destabilize Iran? And when I say, do you destabilize Iran? I'm talking about, do you cause the government to fall?
Right.
If you cause the government to fall, that might lead to problems that we didn't sign up for. All right, where you have a vacuum where your ISIS comes in, and then instead of eliminating the mullahs, we're now having to fight ISIS, just like we did in Syria,
right,
and other places. And so that's where I think we're kind of at this pivotal moment where the U.S. leadership is going to have to decide how far do we want to take this, and what do we want this to look like on the other side.
Yeah.
And personally, I think if we topple the whole government, which we've gotten pretty, Israel's gotten pretty close. They've toppled a lot of the military command, but the Ayatollah is still, you know, he's still alive, still in charge. I think if we topple the whole thing in the name of eliminating Iran's nuclear capabilities, I think there's a possibility that we regret that down the road because of the instability in the region that it further creates.
Yeah, there's so many of those countries like that out there, right? That you get rid of one bad guy and the next one's even worse, or
right,
you know, certainly not better. And the instability with the types of weapons that they have is even more of a problem for sure. And I think for me, this one also comes down to, at least for a little while, and I'm always hesitant to even say this, but trust the guy in the room, and trust the guy that we elected to make these tough decisions on the fly, mm-hmm. and that he can read the situation and pray that he gets good advice and that he does maneuver this and know when to push and when to pull. And, you know, obviously trust but verify, as Reagan would have said.
Yeah.
And it only goes so far, and there's only so much of a leash there before you, and don't be afraid to ask questions. But I am kind of at this point right now, just on the heels of all of it with this, mm-hmm. okay, I know Trump does not want to be in a drawn-out war. He's been masterful at keeping us out of conflicts and war. So knowing that, I like the fact that he's the guy in the room and that he would hopefully only go as far as we absolutely have to go and then get us out of there as quick as possible. We both know, and we've talked about, you know, there's no doubt what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex that drives a lot of this stuff, and it's often about money and not saving lives and protecting people, and so it's a muddy, messy situation, and could yeah. become a very, you know, far worse. So we've got to pray for wisdom for Trump and for Rubio and Hegseth and that whole team. But man, I'm amazed. I'll say this on the bright side, mm-hmm. if a lot of the reports are true, and I'm really trying hard to figure out what's propaganda and what's not, because the Iranians are really good at funding a propaganda machine that had me convinced on late Saturday night that they had a female pilot, that they had shot down these F-35s. Yeah. I mean, it was like coming through my feed every other post. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't follow any of these people. How is this happening? But anyway, so I'm trying to read through the propaganda and what's true and what's not true. But if what I'm hearing from my Israeli sources is true, then they really are conducting an amazing surgical strike.
Yeah.
That so far is very much like the Six-Day War, in that they're having just tremendous success in a very short period of time. So I don't know how much of that to believe yet, right? Until we see a lot, but if that's true, then, you know, maybe this is a situation where we provide some air cover and some support for a little while, and it doesn't turn into a 10-year thing, because they're very capable of doing this by themselves.
Well, and I don't think Israel can afford a long-term war, politically, economically, etc. But so that probably works in the U.S. advantage as far as hey, let's get this thing over with and be done with it. I do like that Israel is being strategic here, because there's been, from what I've read, very minimal civilian casualties in Iran. I'm not going to say zero, but there's been very minimal civilian casualties in Iran, mostly military officers that have been taken out. And Israel, to my knowledge, is not targeting civilian infrastructure. They're targeting military sites, missile launchers, etc. So basically what I'm getting at is this doesn't look like another Gaza.
Yeah.
Where you have entire residential areas completely wiped out, you got a humanitarian crisis. Right now, the Iranian leadership could come to the table and agree to the U.S. and Israeli demands of completely getting rid of the nuclear weapons, and assuming that everybody holds up their end of the bargain, there's at least a country left, right, and a structure left. But I think it's going to get to the point where Trump tells the Ayatollah, if he hasn't already, that you can agree to all of our terms and we can stop this right now, or you're going to have to depart Iran. You can go to Russia, China, you pick, but we're picking your successor. We're picking the next leader that is going to be Western friendly. And that means you're probably going to have to redo the parliament and their whole government structure because they're all radicalized. That's the problem here. Now, there is a lot of Western influence and a lot of Christianity actually spreading on the ground in Iran.
Yeah, that's right.
But the government leaders and the government officials in Iran, they're the radicals.
That's right. That's right. And yeah, I think, in fact, I think I read a few minutes ago, if I read this correctly, that Trump has essentially said that and said, we know exactly where you are. We could take you out right now if we wanted to. I'm giving you a chance. And who knows where all of that goes. And like you said, who would be the successor? Is it this, apparently there's a, you know, royal family that was ousted. I don't know enough of the history of Iran. Somebody call in with that's more of an expert on this than me, from a distance that has been, you know, exiled and could be brought back in. I think that is the harder part for sure, is like, how do you clean up the mess once it's done? Because it's a little bit like Gaza from the standpoint of 50 years now of indoctrination and you know, literally breeding hatred into your people through the education system, hatred of the Jewish people and Israel and America. And so it is, you know, even though, like you said, there's a renaissance happening on the ground, there's Christianity spreading, all of these things, man, you're fighting also against 50 years of that radical, is, you know, just hatred of Israel.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're going to jump to calls, folks, here in just a few minutes when we come back from the break. So, Gary, appreciate you hanging on the line. We'll jump straight to you as soon as we get back. If you want to call in, share your thoughts, or ask Rick and I a question, you can call 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. And share your thoughts on the Israeli-Iran conflict and ask us a question if you would like. You're listening to At the Core here on American Family Radio. Rick and I will be back with you here in just a few minutes.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, here with Walker Wildman on a special edition of The Core, a rare opportunity for us to be on the program together. And we'll take your phone calls during this final segment, 888-589-8840. Walker, we're kind of still in the middle of this Iran-Israel conversation and sort of this. It is a strange place to be because we know biblically we want to support Israel. We don't want to be manipulated, and we also have a duty at home to protect America. So we have to balance all of these things. And so, and you know, knowing how to respond to this, and it looks like, before we go to phones, just your thoughts on maybe even the internal conflict within the administration that not everybody there agrees either, not just in the movement.
Yeah.
But he's probably having to, you know, hear from, you know, different voices on his team, that some of which would not want to go in at all, some that want to go all the way. I mean, I wonder, we got to pray for wisdom for him, because he's hearing a lot of voices right now. Not his head, but
yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, you're right. Yeah, there's the administration split on this, and I think that's why you are getting conflicting reports from the media, is because you have different people leaking on different sides trying to shape the narrative one way or the other. You know, honestly, I think the answer, the truth, is somewhere in the middle. There are your hardliners. We don't need to be involved. You know, we've got enough problems of our own. We've got $37 trillion in debt, you know, and all these valid concerns about the homeland. And so they say, no, zero involvement, right? Nothing, not even weapons, no money, nothing. And then you've got your other side, your kind of, your hawks, if you will, your Lindsey Grahams and others that are they're jumping at every war, right? They want the U.S. to be everywhere all the time, bombing everybody.
He's a true warmonger, right? Like I haven't been a Lindsey Graham fan for long time.
No, I mean, there's not
and
a
this
war.
This is one of the reasons. There's not a war he wouldn't,
Yeah, I mean, he gets unusually excited about war, and it's rather concerning to watch how somebody can be so kind of giddy and careless and and jumping the gun. War is a very sobering thing. I mean, when you think about the human cost, it's to be something we kind of don't want to talk about. And when we do, we're very sober-minded about it.
That's right.
And so, yeah, there's the two ends of the spectrum. But I think that the truth and the right thing to do is probably somewhere in the middle. And that is we need to support Israel. They're our greatest ally in the region. Of course, you've got the biblical perspective as well, which is important. But we also don't need to get, you know, roped into something that ends up lasting years and doesn't really serve our long-term interest as well.
Right.
So somewhere in the middle is probably a good balance.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's exactly the right approach. Well, let's head to the phones. We got Gary in Louisiana. Gary, you're up first today, man. Go ahead. Hey, Gary, can you hear us? Gary, we hear your road noise, but we don't hear you. He got busy. He's ordering a burger and fries right now, I bet.
He's on cruise control.
Actually, he's in Louisiana. He's not ordering a burger and fries. He's getting some good shrimp gumbo at the drive-thru somewhere.
Hey,
Gary?
Gary, you there, man?
All right, I'm going to put you back on hold, and we'll see if he comes back. I think I can do that. I'm not. There we go. Hold. There we go. All right. Let's head over to Scott in Mississippi. He's got a recommendation for us of someone that's an expert on this. I'm always looking, Walker, for people that know more than me. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
Let's see what Scott's recommending. Go ahead, Scott.
Hey, guys. I think this is a God thing. I think y'all might want to talk to this guy and get either one of y'all on one of your shows. He's a former president. He just stepped down as president of SAT-7. They've been broadcasting the gospel in Iran for years now, and nobody can stop them. And he's been a very regular guest on Don Hawkins Encouragement Live that AFR broadcasts every Saturday night at 7 o'clock. And Rex is a wealth of information about how the people there are responding to the gospel over the years. And I think y'all could learn a lot from hearing him. He's very well-spoken and down-to-earth and I think people like that are going to help the lay people understand how important what's going on now is from a lot more than just a geopolitical standpoint.
Yeah, that'd be good. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate you. Appreciate you calling in with that. And, Walker, I was shocked, man, about, I don't know, four or five months ago, my pastor put a stat up on the screen, and he showed how many people were coming to the Lord in Iran. And it was just, I couldn't believe it. I mean, it was just like true revival was taking place. And, of course, part of that, you know, you see the gospel thrive in places where there's persecution and, you know, this almost an underground church. It's just something about it, man, that makes them appreciate the gospel more, and then they want to go live it out and be true disciples, not just this Sunday morning, you know, sugary, sweet Christianity. They're into salty Christianity.
Yeah.
And so apparently that's what's been happening in Iran.
I've heard the same thing. I've actually heard the fastest growing church in the world is in Iran, meaning the number of conversions, the number of baptisms, the number of people coming to faith. Iran is where it's at. Around the world, maybe per capita is probably the way they're measuring that. But yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing what's happening. And I can't tell you how many testimonies I've heard from former Muslims that they have these dreams where they see Jesus, they meet Jesus, and then boom, they convert to Christianity. I've heard multiple testimonies of Muslims who've come to faith in Jesus through very supernatural experiences.
Yeah.
Where the Holy Spirit really convicts them and turns them around. Let me give the number one more time for folks that want to call in, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. Rick, let me just update you on some of the latest developments.
Yeah.
Because this seems to be transpiring as we're on the radio here. But President Trump is now in the Situation Room with the National Security Council at the White House. According to CNN, now these are, once again, some of these media reports are different administration officials that are trying to shape the narrative one way or the other. So who knows, you know, how much water this holds. But according to CNN, President Trump is warming up to the idea of using military assets in Iran to strike their nuclear facilities. President Trump's going to give a press statement here in just a little while after he leaves the Situation Room. And Israel's currently under another barrage of ballistic missiles in Israel as we speak. So this thing isn't cooling off at all. And I thought maybe at some point Iran's going to stop firing ballistic missiles and just lay low in hopes that Israel does as well. But it seems like, Rick, every 3 hours, Iran's launching more missiles into Israel.
I think we've heard at this point about 10% are actually getting to the ground. The Star Wars system is Iron Dome is intercepting about 90%. I was also reading. I was just looking at. I think this might help us with the whole, trusting the guy in the room for a little bit here and seeing how far he goes on this, and the question of how close is Iran to a nuclear weapon, because. You hear people say that, and that's how they kind of entice us to get into these things. This is Vice President J.D. Vance. He said, first, the president has been amazingly consistent over 10 years that Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. And over the last few months, he encouraged his foreign policy team to reach a deal with the Iranians to accomplish the goal. The president has made clear that Iran cannot have uranium enrichment. And he said repeatedly that this would happen one of two ways, the easy way or the other way. And then Vance, so I'm reading this from the Epoch Times, by the way, Vance sought to distinguish between Iran having a nuclear program and a program producing civilian nuclear energy. Mm. He said, quote, Iran could have civilian nuclear power without enrichment, but Iran rejected that. Meanwhile, they've enriched uranium far above the level necessary for any civilian purpose. They've been found in violation of their nonproliferation obligations. And it's one thing to want civilian nuclear energy. It's another thing to demand sophisticated enrichment capacity. It's still another to cling to enrichment while simultaneously violating basic nonproliferation obligations and enriching to the point of weapons-grade uranium. Last thing, he says he may decide the president absolutely has the Vance expressed appreciation for Trump's maintaining the U.S. military focus on protecting U.S. troops and citizens. He said, quote, he may decide he needs to take further action to end Iranian enrichment. That decision ultimately belongs to the president. And then this is what you and I were saying earlier. But I believe the president has earned some trust on this issue. And having seen this up close and personal, I can assure you that he is only interested in using the American military to accomplish the American people's goals. Whatever he does, that is his main focus. So, that's a little bit more detail there beyond what you and I were saying earlier, but the same spirit, that we're basically saying, okay, we're going to trust the guy in the room. He doesn't want to be in a long war here. He doesn't want to do anything that's beyond what's absolutely necessary. And then to that specific issue, it's not necessarily whether or not they have the weapon yet. It's whether or not they've gone way beyond anything they need just civilian energy.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, Rick, I think we've got Gary back.
Oh, let's try it. Let's see, Gary. All right, let's try you again, Gary in Louisiana. Did you get the gumbo? No, we're kidding, man. Go ahead. Can you hear us?
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I listen to you all the time, and you guys have pretty much covered everything. The one thing I did want to say, Israel does not have the capabilities to take out those nuclear power facilities. That's going to take B-52 bombers to take them out because they're so buried so far under the ground. So we kind of have to get involved. You can't trust these people. I don't care what they sign or what they say. They're untrustworthy. The mullahs have to go to ever get any peace in the Middle East over there. Anyway, you guys have covered pretty much everything else. If from what I'm hearing and from what I've read, it's going to take those B-52 bombers to take out the nuclear facilities. On the other thought that you guys were sharing, and I would never give his name, I know a missionary in Iran, and there is a lot of people turning to Christianity there. That is a real thing, without a doubt.
Praise God.
But
praise God. Hey, thanks, Gary. Appreciate it, brother.
Awesome.
You know, Rick, I think Gary's probably right there, and that's what I'm reading as well as far as the need for the B-52 to truly go deep into the mountains of Iran to take out that facility. So that was very good insight from Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And two, you know, I mean, of course, I don't know any of that technology, right? I don't know what's actually needed, what's not. I'm not an expert on that. It's way beyond my expertise. But there's a side of me. This is terrible. Maybe I shouldn't say this on the air. But there's a side of me that's like, okay, well, it might just be good practice for our B-52s.
Yeah, so like, we don't use them very often.
Yeah, if some of this stuff's going to be outdated in another 6 months or a year, I'm like, you know, hey, it's kind of like when I go grab something in the fridge that's going to be bad tomorrow, so I'm going to go ahead and eat that tonight. I could actually see the American military and President Trump saying, you know what, those facilities need to go. We're going to go ahead and come in and help you with that. Obviously, I'm being somewhat facetious, but because we know when we do that, we also now draw the ire of the, you know, most of the Muslim community. Now, I did want to ask you this, Walker. There's some Muslim countries that have really moderated in the last few years.
Absolutely.
May very well side with America and Israel on this. They want the terror to stop too.
That's a good point. And here, I'm glad you brought that up because it reminded me of something I wanted to make a point on earlier. And that is the what's not being talked about, it's being murmured about, but not broadly, is the historic opportunity for peace in the entire region. To your point, you have Saudi Arabia, you have Egypt, you have Qatar, you have Jordan, and others that are Muslim-majority countries in the region that are at peace with Israel. Now, of course, do they love Israel? No, they don't love Israel like America loves Israel, but they also don't shoot missiles at Israel, and they have commercial flights going back and forth. And passports are exchanged, et cetera. And so if you eliminate the Iran factor here, whatever that looks like, without creating this massive instability where Hezbollah and Hamas are no longer getting funding and they're basically decapitated, you're talking about peace that hasn't been seen in that region that I'm aware of in modern history. If you take out Iran without destabilizing the entire region, if you're able to thread that needle, Rick, you're talking about levels of peace that hasn't been seen, at least in my lifetime.
I mean, it could be an absolute game changer for a season that really does transform the Middle East, you know, for potentially generations. And it is exactly what you just described. We know they're the ones that have funded all these different groups you just named. And if you dry up that source and prevent that from happening, I mean, will they still exist? Maybe. Will they still get money from other radicals? Nothing like what they've been able to get and what they've been able to do with the revenue they've been able to make because of Biden and Obama being foolish about those things. So I think you're right, man. I think that potential is really there. I had a friend of mine that's an Assyrian Christian mentioned to me this weekend when we were talking about it. He came from Iran. He's a phenomenal guy. And he said, you know, his concern is the regime always gets worse when you change the regime over there. And so that's what he's worried about. And it was interesting to hear from him, you know, with that being his people. I mean, he prays for the Iranian people all the time. He's still got relatives there. But he's like, Rick, I don't want Trump to get distracted from the domestic agenda that's so important and what he's doing to rebuild liberty here. But I do think, to that, I would say we can walk and chew gum, and America has the ability to deal with some of these international things while dealing with, and I think Trump definitely has the ability to do it as well.
I agree. I don't think President Trump is going to drag us into something that is beyond a few months, maybe 6 month conflict. But we're not. I don't think we're going to be sitting here in 2 years talking about war with Iran still.
Yeah, amen. And that's what we need to pray for. Everybody pray for wisdom for President Trump, discernment, how far to go, what to do, and for the Israelis to be effective in what they're doing and for it to be short-term, more like the Six-Day War than something that would be drug out like Iraq and Afghanistan ended up being. Thanks so much for listening today, folks. Thanks for giving Walker and I a chance to do the program together. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. You ever wonder why our society is so ravenous to abort babies? Well, according to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents. They sickly believe that the blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies, in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle. Their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills, where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. Every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. Donate securely today. Dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 or go to preborn.com, preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.